Well, that's a wrap on the 2021 Chicago Bears season and Matt Nagy's tenure. On this episode of the Chicago Audible, we will break down the Bears' loss here to the Minnesota Vikings. But before we get to that, the NFL playoffs do begin next week without the Bears, and sports betting season keeps ramping up. And that means you need a sports book with integrity and longevity like BetUS. BetUS have been pioneers in the sportsbook industry for nearly three decades, thriving and paying you, the loyal customer. What's great about BetUS is that they have loads of bonuses. So join now at BetUS.com today and receive a 125% sign-up bonus by using our code Chicago125. BetUS has all your NFL games with team and player props, as well as loads of NFL futures and odds. BetUS also gives you options in addition to the NFL. You can bet on UFC matches, the NBA, NHL, and much more. So follow my lead and get your phone, online, and social sports betting partner with integrity and longevity like I did. Cash in on your 125% sign-up bonus at BetUS.com with our code Chicago125. BetUS, you bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS. You're listening to the Chicago Audible Podcast, changing up the way Bears fans stay up to date on their favorite team since 2015. Now get ready, because it's time to bear down. Welcome back, Bears fans, to another episode of the Chicago Audible, and welcome to our Week 18 Chicago Bears postgame show, our first ever 17th postgame show, as the Chicago Bears lost to the Minnesota Vikings 31-17. They fall to 6-11 on the season, and this is a game that they had pretty much in hand in the first half, but ended up being outscored 28-3 in the final 30 minutes of the game. I'm Russell DeWitt. I'm joined by my co-host Mason West to kind of break it down for us one final time. Mason, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the show, and we're going to keep this one a little brief. We expect to have more content throughout the week with Black Monday coming up tomorrow, and you never know what news is going to kind of shake out and win. In this game, I don't think it warrants too much of a breakdown by any means. So maybe we can look at this game. I don't think it was what you expected. How do you want to just begin it? I don't even have a great way to kind of frame it.
I guess it's confirmation more than anything. I mean, we knew a lot of this, and we knew what this was going to end up looking like for the most part. But it's confirmation of where the Bears are at and ultimately what they were over the last, you know, couple of years under the Matt Nagy regime. I think one of the things that really pulls it out is the fact that the Bears had 4th-and-1, I believe it was 3 times, and they had 2 sacks, 1 pick-6. They threw it all 3 times when you had a running back like David Montgomery, who more often than not can get you that 1 yard. And it's, if that doesn't encapsulate kind of what this era has been for the Bears, then I'm not really sure what does.
There's a few things here and there throughout the game, whether it's the big plays led up by the defense. You know, they had a real good start of this game, and then they decided, we're just not cover anyone any longer. I think the Vikings had 3 players who averaged at least 21 yards per reception. The back end of that defense, for some reason, decided not to come out of the locker room at halftime. But the 4th-and-1s, Mason, when we talk about the offense, you know, we can really get into it. But that was definitely one that I think everyone is kind of clamoring about right now after the game. You said 3. I thought it was 4 of those, which makes it even
probably
worse.
Was 4.
And again, they all look the same. It's 4th-and-1. Whether Montgomery's on the sideline or in the backfield, doesn't matter. You're not going to hand it off to him. It makes no sense. We don't know what a halfback dive is, inside zone. It doesn't matter. You can run I formation, power it. I don't care. But the last thing you need to do is do what you did last time, which is not hand the ball off and allow Andy Dalton to roll back, you know, drop back with pressure in his face and have no time to do anything. That happened way too often here in this game. Pure comedy by the time that interception came to be at the end of it as well. It just could have got worse and worse, which, again, is a microcosm of the Matt Nagy era as well. But let's jump into our opening drive, and I want to begin with my monster moment of the game. And Mason, you can tell me this is a cop-out or not, but my monster moment of the game is when that final whistle blew.
No, I think that's fair, because there's nothing that would have happened in this game that kind of mattered. The most important thing was that it ended.
Yeah, no, it really, you know, I'm glad it's over. Honestly, it was real tough to watch here throughout, like I said, the second half by itself. And even the first half, like, yay, we're winning. But yet again, the same song to the, you know, same dance as well, moving the ball, getting inside the 30, and then just deciding like, oh, we forgot how to play offense. Yet again, over and over again. In the preview show, I mentioned how atrocious the Bears were in the red zone the first time they played the Vikings. This time, they couldn't even reach the red zone. Like, they decided, like, the 30 is now the new threshold in which we're going to just go completely inept on this side of the ball. But I'm just glad it's over. I'm tired of, you know, having to talk or think about, you know, coaches being fired and why is everything going wrong. And now we can really kind of shift our focus into improving and fixing, because you can't really do that in season. So that's why the 2021 Bears season officially ending, allowing us to kind of recalibrate with a promising young rookie quarterback, now second-year quarterback Justin Fields. That's why I think that's going to be my monster moment of the game. And honestly, when you look at the plays, nothing really warranted the official monster moment as well. So Mason, I hand it over to you. I know usually we do a standout stat. I haven't been doing a post-game show for about 2 months now. It's my first time back behind a mic for one of these. So I don't know if you're still doing stats or if you just have like a general opening statement, but whatever you want to do here in our opening drive, take it away.
Yeah, I'll do a little combo of stat factoid. So starting on a positive note, Darnell Mooney, right, going over 1,000 receiving yards. That's fantastic for him and something that's there to build upon. On the other end of it, more of a specific stat, is just the general lack of any efficiency by the Bears in terms of third, fourth, et cetera, right? Third down, 33%. Fourth down, 17%, 1-for-6 overall. 0% in the red zone and 0% in goal to go. You can't win a football game like that. And it's just, it is frustrating, because it just seems like there was no learning going on. This was something that could have almost been the stat of the game every week, specifically when there were losses, right? What is happening on third, fourth down? And just the fact that it was almost always like, all right, this is a fourth down situation. Like kind of that commenter in your head. And it was always, this is a fourth down situation, because you just never know when the Bears are actually ever going to be in a position, you know, on their opponent's half of the field to take advantage of it. So it's like, well, we're here, might as well go four downs.
Yeah, 1-of-6 on fourth down. Mason, do you think any other team this year has been sub 20% on fourth down? Like, hey, you have to go for it plenty of times to get under that mark. Obviously, you can go 0%, but in terms of at least getting one conversion, I don't know if any other team's been under 20% who has converted a fourth down in this game, like in this season. Like, that's a remarkable stat in of itself.
Well, absolutely. I mean, like you said, like, how many teams need to go for it on fourth down 6 times alone, let alone only convert one of them? Like, that's ridiculous.
No, it's literally insane, which, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. So I'm not going to go out there and call the Bears coach that per se, but he was living up to at least the definition today with those fourth down calls. Let's jump in now, Mason, to the second quarter of the show, and let's just kind of keep this train rolling and talk about the Chicago Bears offense a little bit more. Obviously, we saw Andy Dalton here today. The offensive line, as well as he, did not help one another. I think he was sacked 7 times here in this game. Really held the ball way too long, trying to make a little bit too much happen. What's just your quick summary of what we saw here on offense? Obviously, early on, able to move the ball until you got to the 30, but then the Vikings came out of halftime with a little bit of chip on their shoulder, something to prove. I'm sure they had a good halftime speech about, you know, you only got 30 minutes. Is that how you really want to go out? Made some adjustments, and the Bears could not counter. Again, another microcosm of the Nagy era, but I'll leave it over to you. What's just some of your top-level thoughts about the final time we saw Nagy's offense here in Chicago?
It's just one of those instances where, and we see this year in and year out, where there's almost a fakeness to this offense whenever you do see success. Because even in the first half, when the Bears were winning and they were clearly dominating, like, time of possession and actually in theory dominating the Vikings, because at one point the Vikings had negative net passing yards, there was a fallacy to it, because a lot of it was set up by, you know, issues on the Vikings end, good field position that the defense was able to give them in that first half. And, you know, one of the differences between this year or last year, comparing all the way to 2018, was that the offense really wasn't able to get any touchdowns out of it, right? I mean, it was field goal, field goal, field goal, field goal, and that's ridiculous. When you start with as good a field position as you do, you're not on the five, you're not starting inside the 20 every single time. And most NFL franchises, yes, if let's say they started the ball in the 20, are going to be able to march 10, 20, 30 yards before they have to punt. The Bears are giving the ball like at the 50. Yes, you get 10, 20 yards. Like, oh, look at this. We're on our opponent's 30-yard line. This is great. No, you were given this opportunity. And with them being even ahead, Dave Montgomery goes off to the wayside, right? It's why is he not more of a focal point? He had 20 attempts, but it just didn't feel like a 20, if that makes sense. I mean, he had 72 yards, 3.6 yards per carry, which overall, pretty solid. I'll take three. I mean, if you give the ball to him three times, that means he's going to get a first down in theory. And then Khalil Herbert, four attempts. It's just, give me more of that. Like right now, with the way your team is constructed, unfortunately, that is the strength of your team. You're not super dynamic. If Darnell Mooney and everybody else, because Robinson's not giving you much, Komet's not giving you much, it was just like just a stubbornness for moving what Nagy wanted to do and just say, I'm going to go on my own terms. But it was such a fizzle of a my own terms.
Fizzle. I like that term there, Mason. Darnell Mooney, of course, had a phenomenal game. 12 catches on 16 targets, 126 yards. Do you think they came into this game just expecting to give it to him, you know, early and often, just to see, well, hope that he can reach that 1,000-yard mark, which he did. So congratulations to Darnell for being a 1,000-yard receiver, the first for the Bears since 2014, which was Alshon Jeffery. If you have your Bears history enough in your head, you'll know that also was Mark Trestman's final year here in Chicago. So another interesting factoid about how some parallels were happening between those two coaches and 1,000-yard receivers. I was very, you know, excited to see him involved, but I thought at points he was too involved. Like, why can't we get anyone else in moving as well? And maybe it's just, you know, talent, maybe it's scheme, and Mooney is, you know, the outlet that's working, so keep going to it. But I was still disappointed that, you know, no one else besides what Demir Bird somehow had five catches, and I don't even recall half of those.
Well, I do think you're right. I think there was probably at least a little bit of that motivation, like, hey, let's get him to 1,000 yards. Players keep track of that. Coaches keep track of that. They care. Same thing, you know, with Robert Quinn's sacks. Even if Quinn didn't necessarily show elation with it, you could tell the rest of the team cared about it. You saw that on the Vikings side, that it seemed like the players really wanted to get Justin Jefferson that record that for yardage. But, you know, Mike Zimmer is Mike Zimmer, and, you know, no one on his team can have nice things. So that wasn't going to happen today, apparently. So they do care about that. So I think there was definitely a factor there. And then part of it is just when you do watch what's happening, some of it's the play design. Like, you need 6 yards, but you have four flies going downfield and they're all covered. So yeah, no wonder it's only going to be the cross underneath the Mooney that's open. Some of it's going to be the lack of separation by the rest of the receivers. You know, Allen Robinson, it's not like I was like, oh, you know, why aren't you getting the ball to A-Rob? He's wide open. He just wasn't getting open. Cole Kmet. And some of it is the noodle arming that was going on by Andy Dalton. A lot of underthrows that were occurring. One in particular I can think of was that seam route Kmet had. It was just underthrown, like missed out on that. And the benefit of Mooney is because he's so fast, he can make an adjustment and get to some of those underthrows too. So probably a combination of all those factors.
A lot of very valid points. The noodle arm may be, you know, being the best one that you made there, because it was on full display all game long. Once Dalton wants to push that ball past maybe 10 yards, you can tell he lost a lot of steam on it. You know, he finished the day 33 of 48. No way he should have thrown that ball 48 times today. As I mentioned, the 7 sacks, 1 touchdown, those 2 interceptions late in this one. And that's how he's ending the Bears' career or tenure here. And early on, I know the announcing crew for Fox, you know, very much, you know, what a tremendous, great career Andy Dalton's has had. And that tune kind of changed towards the end. I know we talked in the preview show about Andy Dalton, and, you know, he has one final chance here to put something on tape and film as he goes into his offseason looking for his next opportunity. Did he help or hurt his standing, do you think?
Man, if you're looking at the tape, he hurt it. There is one of the things that they talked about in terms of why Andy Dalton was starting this year over Justin Fields, and then even some of the naysayers that kind of as the season has been wrapping up maybe have been saying that, you know, Justin shouldn't have started at all. It should have been Andy the whole time if it wasn't for the injury, was his pocket presence, his ability to go through progressions, not take unnecessary hits, all those things, the sacks. he lost how many yards on sacks, like, that he just held the ball too long? I mean, they're definitely right. He missed multiple receivers downfield. We don't know the exact reads, of course. Again, the lack of arm strength, as we've already talked about, that's not going to get any better with another team, you know, next year or anywhere in the future. So I would say he absolutely hurt it. The only thing helping Andy Dalton is that there's a lot of not great quarterback play or players who might be retiring or moving on that he can take advantage of. But by no stretch of the imagination should he just be handed a starting job. He should, best case scenario, be going into a competition and have to actually win that competition.
Any fond memories, any highlights of Dalton's time here that you want to reflect on at this stage?
He rocked a pretty magnificent beard. I will say that. That was great. The first press conference that he had over Zoom, and he had the perfectly coiffed hair, really fit that Ryan Pace brand, you could say. But at the end of the day, like, Andy Dalton is he's a great guy. You know, he handled, I think, this entire season well. He was not put in a great position, you know, coming in, and I assume was, in fact, told, yeah, you are QB1, but, oh, yeah, fast forward, we're going to draft Justin Fields, who's going to set, the entire fan base on fire in terms of just their mere presence. What he's able to do there, he's done stuff for the community. He made a donation to the Parker Dickerson Fund, so that was fantastic on his end. He didn't have to do that, you know, especially in a city that, to an extent, rejected him. From the time that he was signed, no one was happy about it. And that only intensified with the Justin Fields signing. So, you know, just a great guy. But in terms of actual play, probably the one highlight that stands out was in the preseason, the deep ball to Rodney Adams against the Bills, I think. Because that was the moment where I was like, okay, so maybe if Justin doesn't start, like, you know, this could be something. Andy Dalton can hold down the fort. And then it just kind of went downhill from there.
Even that ball was underthrown.
It was.
I remember that one fondly as well. So when I'm looking at this Bears offense, just in general now, you know, the season's over. I don't think that all the stats really matter from this game or anything of that nature. We have some young guys that I'm still excited to build this offense around, whether it's David Montgomery and Khalil Herbert tandem, Darnell Mooney, as well as I'm still kind of excited about Daz Newsome. I know he's not getting that offensive role yet, but what I saw to him in special teams today, all that energy, whether it's as a returner with, well, pretty much playing with no fear, like, you know, he wanted to score every time he touched the ball there, whether on those punt returns here today. And he made a real good special teams tackle as well. What other, I guess, items or players, I guess, would have you excited looking into 2022?
Man, that's a really, I think Thomas Graham is someone that, while a lot of fans are kind of latching onto him because there's not a lot else going on, he truly does have some potential there. It may not be necessarily full out, you know, second corner, just because he does lack a little top end speed, you know, size. The athleticism is not jumping up the charts at you, but he plays smart. And so at a bare minimum, he could carve out a pretty solid, I would think, slot role. Especially with the whole offseason under his belt, that he could work on that. We heard Jalen Johnson talking about how, for him, the slot can be a little difficult just because he hasn't really played a lot. So, I mean, that's a hard position to play. So he's a player that I'd be really excited to see how the Bears build around. And, I mean, there's the obvious ones. Roquan Smith finally getting recognized as a top-tier linebacker next year is on my wish list. If there's, like, a top three players I want to be recognized, that's one of them. I'm really interested to see what Cole Kmet does this offseason. Like, this, if this offseason and into next year you don't see some big steps from him, that's where now my concern comes in, because tight end takes a while, all those things. That's where the excuses end. Like, at this point, you'll have enough time in this system, not in the system, but in a professional environment. You know, you're away from baseball enough, all those things. Those are the two that jump off the top of my head. You know, I'm excited about, yeah, Dave Montgomery. Again, he's the heart and soul kind of this offense right now. But he is a running back that you drafted in the third round. He's creeping towards, do you pay the guy? Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's funky. So there's more people leaving due to either lack of production, due to age, due to contract next year, than there are people that you're excited about, which is a shame. And that's tough for what is going to be a rebuilding team.
It's going to be interesting to see how the Bears approach this offseason from right now like head coach, GM, what are they going to do? And then whoever's in charge of those decisions, how do they rebuild this roster? Like when you look at Justin Fields and what he has to work with next year, we know it's Darnell Mooney. We know it's going to have to be Cole Kmet for better or for worse, if he progresses or not. And then outside of that, there's this big question marks. So I don't know about Demir Byrd. Same thing with, you know, Allen Robinson. He's not going to be a Bear next year, most likely. Jimmy Graham, same kind of deal. And then Marquise Goodwin. That's a huge chunk of who's here, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, because I don't think we've gotten the style of player, the, you know, production that we would hope out of, you know, that core group of players as well. But there will be a ton of work with, you know, not the most cap room, not a lot of draft capital. So those are some of my concerns. And again, I think we saw that here today, because a lot of things had to go through Darnell Mooney or bust. And then when you get to fourth down, you know, the play calling didn't help at all. Any final words about the Chicago Bears offense in their last go about here for the 2021 season?
Not a lot to say there. Just it'll be interesting to see where the Bears go from here. Just because if you go, you know, let's say with an offensive minded head coach, that identity is going to be really important. We've already kind of had the go around of having the head coach play caller. Is that something that scares away the Bears? But if you go with more of, you know, maybe a special teams or a defensive coach, that assistant hire is going to be so important. Like I need an interesting, innovative offense that builds on itself. And as of right now, the Bears simply just don't have that. And we can see that on a week-to-week basis. And it's going to be really interesting how that next person comes in, like you said, uses some pieces that are going to have to be, you know, free agency, undrafted free agents, because they don't have all of the cap space. They don't have really any draft picks. They're very limited in that. So it's going to be really kind of patching things together. And honestly, yes, and patience from the general fans, because it's not going to be fixed next year due to all that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting offseason, how we try to taper expectations. From my experience in my lifetime, when Bears change head coaches and make some personnel decisions as well, you can easily get hyped when there is no football to be played and talk yourself up. And we want to make sure we don't have such a huge letdown. But I don't have any other final words. I'm glad that, you know, Matt Nagy won't be calling another play for the Bears, or Bill Lazor for that matter. And this scheme is going to be thrown out the window. And we're going to get hopefully someone in this building that can utilize Justin Field, cater to his strengths, and start setting this young buck up for success down the road. Let's go ahead and jump into the third quarter of this postgame show. Let's talk about this Chicago Bears defense, and kind of like the offense, a tale of two halves. Early on in this game, you saw them wreaking havoc in and around the line of scrimmage, whether it's bottling up Dalvin Cook for minimal yardage, getting into Kirk Cousins' grill pretty much immediately. Guys like Angelo Blackson had a hot start. Same thing with Bilal Nichols right up front. And then you saw some good things in pass coverage, which again, that does usually coincide. But as I mentioned as well, they let up 28 points there in the second half. Kirk Cousins only completed 14 passes, but three of them were touchdowns, very similar to the last meeting when he didn't complete a ton of passes, but had a decent amount of two touchdowns too in that game, but he only had to throw the ball like nine times in order to get it, something like that. Mason, I know you said it in the preview show, you know, Kirk Cousins isn't really good. Why did the Bears make him look good again?
The biggest thing was once the Bears lost some of that pressure they were able to generate in the first half, he was able to sit back there much longer and pick them apart to an extent. And I say to an extent because it wasn't like he had these amazing precision passes. And you can highlight that with one play in particular, the one where Eddie Jackson had picked up Justin Jefferson. He's with him the whole time, literally the entire time. And then he just kind of looks up for the ball, loses it, and it's Justin Jefferson is like, all right, I'll just take this. Like there was no contest there. And then there was the other touchdown pass where he had four Bears who were just kind of near the defender, maybe within 5 to 10 yards was kind of the range for all of them. But there was clearly a lack of communication. And that's plagued the Bears for the entire season, lack of communication in the secondary. You had the Jalen Johnson issue where he didn't touch the receiver after he caught it. Luckily, Eddie Jackson came over and tackled, pushed him out of bounds and was able to like save a touchdown in that instance on that play. But there's just some funky stuff that's going on in the secondary, and that is something that has to get cleaned up in this offseason and next year.
It's unacceptable that the Bears allowed 208 yards receiving on only 8 catches, and that counted for 83% of the Vikings' passing yards for the entire game. Just 8 receptions that they allowed. Again, 208 yards. That's pretty bad. What is that? Divided by 5, that's like 40 yards a catch on just on those 8 plays in of itself. It's tough because earlier in the game, when the defense was really firing on all cylinders, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, Sean Desai has done a real good job this season. First year as defensive coordinator, we knew he had to grow into this role. It wasn't always easy, but now down the stretch, his guys are playing with a lot of energy. They're playing well, and he's doing that with a secondary that we all believe the talent level suspect. He's doing that without Khalil Mack for the last 11 weeks now. And then they go out and they have the second half that they did, and it has me, I'm not purely second-guessing, but I don't know. I feel bad that tweet's out there right now. What about you? And I know whoever gets hired as head coach, they're going to have their fair share of who's going to be on their staff. Do you hope that they would retain Sean Desai as defensive coordinator at this stage? Or do you want them to maybe look elsewhere? And I know Fangio just getting fired as well. People are excited about a possible reunion, whether it's with Chicago, whether it's with Harbaugh, whether it's with both. But I'm just curious your thoughts on, Sean Desai after now his first full year as defensive coordinator, if he deserves a shot to come back here despite a change at head coach.
He absolutely deserves at a minimum an interview, right? Whoever gets hired as head coach, sitting down and saying, all right, Sean, why should you be retained as that defensive coordinator? Because we've seen glimmers, we've seen some positive stuff, whether you're talking this game in particular or over the course of the season. Now, the problem is that there have also been some big misses, like the second half of this game or just other games in general, where you do question, like, what is going on currently with this defense, or like the communication in the secondary that I was just talking about earlier. Is that a coaching issue where that's not being pressed upon enough, or is that simply on the players that because at some point the players have to be held responsible for ultimately the actions on the field. The coach can only put them in, do so much there. So there has to be conversation. Now, I'm someone, too, that it sucks when someone gets away. Right. Staley is a good example of that, where he was able to move on and do some pretty great stuff. And you don't want that someone else benefiting because you cut something too early. I think Sean Desai has gotten some pretty good recognition around the league, and people have whispers that, he will generate interest in other positions if he were to be let go. Vic Fangio is interesting. He is, he obviously created one of the best defenses that the Bears have ever had in 2018. He was a part of that. He was same thing there. He was retained, after the Fox era, but at the same time, retreads don't work a lot. Sometimes it's just because of, you just need like a different voice, different venue, things of that nature. It's hard to, come back, not with tail between your legs, but come back after being a head coach, a defense coordinator, place you already were. And, there is such thing as trying to move forward just with young and ingenuity too, because how long is Vic going to remain coaching? I mean, is he going to be, if he got hired next year, would he be the defensive coordinator for another 5 years? Are you going to be looking for a new defensive coordinator another year or two? There's room for both in there. I would be really upset if Sean Desai didn't even get the conversation.
No, that's a very valid point. And I think they would, out of respect, do that at a bare minimum. We'll see how it all shakes out, but tough, I guess, position for Sean Desai right now as well, to kind of get that promotion and then kind of being, not handcuffed per se, but kind of tied to Matt Nagy throughout this too. So he could be someone who's ousted, who maybe doesn't completely deserve it, but we'll see again how it all kind of will play here throughout the next few weeks as we kind of keep tabs on things. Mason, what do you want to talk about from this Bears defense today? Again, early on playing well, playing at a high level, and then it felt like they just kind of let their foot off the gas and kind of thought that the offseason began at halftime instead of at the end of the fourth quarter.
That's what it seemed like. That's really the best explanation I can come up with, because it's the same players, first half to second half, right? And it's not like the Vikings did anything substantially different in the second half. The play designs, the play calls in general were all pretty similar. And so did you just lose it a little bit? Or did the fact that the offense started sputtering even more so, turning the ball over when they did, having to punt the ball from where they did have to punt it from, et cetera, et cetera. Did the defense just run out of gas? that sucks. You don't want to have to do that, but I'd rather it be that than you just got straight beat. Because that way, that just means you have to totally change stuff, right? The players you have just aren't the players you want to have there. If it's just been a long season, you're not really playing for anything, and it's like, look, let's just get to our off season. That's slightly more acceptable, I guess. I'm trying to find the silver lining here. It's really hard to do that. But what you did see was there's some players that you could keep and build off of next year. Like you mentioned Blackson. He had a fantastic game. Because maybe you're not paying Bilal Nichols and you're keeping Blackson around. Because Bilal Nichols is a free agent. Akeem Hicks is probably not going to be here. You need to sign some of these people. Jalen Johnson was fine.
Well, he has to learn how to touch someone when they catch the ball in front of him. And he's got, this isn't college. He's 2 years removed now. Like, that should not have happened.
That should not happen. So that's a huge learning moment. Roquan Smith keeps being Roquan Smith. There's pieces, but I mean, there's nothing that happened today on that defensive side where you were just like ecstatic either.
No, I think maybe the Kirk Cousins fumble. I was ecstatic for a moment, a blip. Is that okay?
There was that. There was the Thomas Graham almost interception. I liked the effort to try to get to the ball.
Yeah, there was a few of those where they were able to kind of get that ball up in the air. It almost felt like, you know what it felt like? That wild card game against the Eagles years ago with Nick Foles at quarterback. Like, all the balls that are just up in the air for feels like forever. You can count to seconds and we can't track it and come away with those interceptions. And again, in a game like today where the final score doesn't matter, whatever, you can live with it. But if this was like week 5 and we lost by like a score, we can look at those as like, you know, game changing altering plays that they failed to capitalize on. So again, context and is key here as well. Anything else about this Bears defense here today, or just in general as you're looking at the season as a whole?
Oh man, so again, just people leaving. Deion Bush, Tashaun Gibson, both going to be gone. Who's going to be your— they're going to try to bring one of them back. It seems like Gibson keeps getting these one-year deals from the Bears because he's been fine, right? I mean, it's not been terrible, but he's not been great. Deion Bush had blips here and there, but he's never wowed you. So Alec Ogletree is another person, though, that I personally kind of want back, at least as a camp body that maybe, you know, that can fill that spot. As you talked about, Will, there's going to be a lot of positions that need to be filled here, and you can't just get rid of everybody. Right, because if we do need to fill safety, that's a draft pick or a free agent. You know, we just talked linebacker, cornerback, because currently you're not happy, obviously, with what Artie Burns or Kendall Vildor are doing. Then you go to the offensive side of the ball, and the list continues. So for me, Alec Ogletree is someone that I was happy enough with how he played that I think he can be functional opposite of Roquan Smith, because Danger Bathan is, I think, out the door at this point. I mean, he just has proved not to be healthy or productive enough to keep around. So that is a person I hope at least gets maybe like a contract of some kind to see, all right, what can he come back with next year and hold for at least a year or two until maybe we draft someone or there's a free agent signing.
Yeah, that's easier said here than done, Mason. Other than that, I don't think I have anything defense specific at this stage. I mean, we have the whole offseason to kind of dive into every player, every position, and figure out where it is and where we need to take it. So I don't think we need to, you know, do that here on this show per se. I guess that's when I look at this game in general. It felt like two teams, for the most part, that were ready for the season to be over. I don't know if the officiating crew wanted it to get done early or the timekeeper, but did you notice that running clock? Like, guys will run straight out of bounds, and the ref even would do, like, you know, the stop the clock, and then you look on the bottom of the screen, it's just a tick-tock, tick-tock. I don't know if it's, like, an unwritten rule in the NFL for games that don't have, like, any implications. Like, just get it done as quickly as you can, but that's what it felt like.
I didn't think about it until I saw you tweet out about it, and then I looked like, oh, you're right. This clock should be stopped. What's going on?
Yeah, no, I'm not, you know, I'm thankful. The wife's been doing a great job, you know, keeping the baby occupied and calm, and she's been doing that for 4 hours now. So after this, it'll be my turn for the evening. So luckily it's not stretching too far down here for me. We can move in here to the, you know, special teams talk real quickly here. You know, Santos perfect yet again. Another player from Tulane that the Bears just keep, hitting with Matt Forte, Darnell Mooney, Santos. You know, there's something about those players that come from that school and come to Chicago. Daz Newsome, as I mentioned, impressed me with his punt returns today. I like the mentality that he played with, always seeming like he was trying to score and giving his best effort out there. And even as a kickoff coverage guy, being one of the first guys down there on the field as well. So for like your fifth or sixth receiver on the depth chart as a rookie in his final game, like you can tell he was going to miss playing some football throughout this summer and was making the most of his chances. Anything else in this department that you want to hit on?
No, it'll just be interesting to see what they do with that Daz Jakeem Grant kind of combo. Cause you know, Jakeem Grant is currently, it would be a free agent. Do you bring him back? That's just going to be money. That's another thing they have to worry about. Or are you content with what Daz Newsome can give you for your punt returns and what Khalil Herbert can give you for your kick returns and just hope and just move on from Jakeem Grant. But Grant factored in interesting to the offense. So that's just another cog in the wheel of what will be going on this summer.
All right. I don't think I have anything else here for special teams myself. So we can go ahead and move into now the fourth quarter of the show. And Mason, do you want to call an audible? Is there anything in this game that you wish you can change?
I think this game pretty much went exactly how I'm okay with it going. I don't need the whispers and mumblings and rumblings of, oh, the Bears won three in a row and the offense actually started to look solid as the corner being turned. I never root for a loss by any stretch of the imagination, but just the way that they lost just kind of fits perfectly with the story that's going on. So it's kind of nice to have a bow on top of that. So, and also, Justin Jefferson didn't get the record against the Bears. So that's one, it's nice not to be an anecdote in someone else's record book. So pretty much I am okay with how this game went.
All right. Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. It's over. And that's the best thing for us here at the end of the day. If I had to change anything, it would be every single play call on fourth down. How about that?
That would have at least been more interesting because as of right now, just seeing Andy Hilton run straight 10 yards backwards and getting sacked was not that fun.
No, not one bit. Let's go ahead and decide who is the final MVP of the season. Mason, do you think we're going to have a consensus for the most valuable Bear here today? I think it's clear cut. There's only one player in my mind that's really deserving of you know, our little virtual trophy on our screen, and that's, to me, Darnell Mooney. Again, 126 total yards on 12 catches. That's my guy. How about you?
Oh, 100%. I would agree with that. If someone on the defense had stepped up a little bit more, that would have been fantastic. But as of that didn't happen. And Mooney is one of his better games, whether it was forced or just because he was the only person actually getting open.
All right, let's do our final 2 minute warnings of the year. And Mason, that means you are officially up first. So let's go ahead and get into your 2 minute warning.
Don't want to beat a dead horse, but it's going to be consistent with what the last couple of weeks have been. We're looking ahead. That is what it is. There's going to be huge, huge changes, right? For in some instances, they're sad, you know, like an Akeem Hicks moving on in that situation. Some of them are going to be looked at overall on a positive note, like moving on from a Matt Nagy. It'll be interesting to see what does happen higher up. There's tons of rumblings obviously going on with how the Bears are going to try to handle front office. We're going to just have to wait and see over the next couple weeks to a month because this has to get decided quick. Combine's coming up and there's this, right? That's kind of the deadline that all teams set because you want your GM, you want your head coach able to give input at the combine. It's a little quick. I think there's actually a great article by The Ringer that went out that talked about kind of the issues in terms of how football teams hire, fire, etc. Their head coaches and how it's out of date and out of touch with how it should be done. So look that up. Great article, I think, because that's what we're going to be going through over the next couple weeks. And really just stay tuned and be ready to hear some interesting tidbits as they come floating out.
Wow. Not even halfway through your 2 minutes, Mason.
There's just nothing exciting to talk about. Like, no. Even if, like, maybe if Justin had played, it would have been slightly more interesting, but also I'm not a person, like, I didn't need Justin to play this game. I'm good with it. Just don't need to get beat up in any stretch of the imagination. The 40 reps you're gonna get is not going to all of a sudden make next year that much better. It's fine. Moving on.
You know, I felt opposite of you on Thursday about that. But after watching Dalton kind of get beaten back there as much, I'm with you. Like, I didn't need to see Justin take 7 sacks today, although Justin probably doesn't get sacked the exact same 7 because he would have been able to kind of get away from a couple of those defenders. But still, you get my point. He would have taken hits that maybe we should let him kind of take it easy here getting into that offseason, which, by the way, post-game, Darnell Mooney said that he and Justin Fields will begin their offseason training tomorrow. So they're already two guys getting excited and, you know, not giving up and putting their nose to the grindstone for 2022. So for me and my two-minute warning, my first in 2 months and my final one in 2021 season, oh, man, where do you go? Because, like, the Matt Nagy era, it's done. Like, and that's, I'm sad that I have to say that with, like, a smile on my face. You know, a few years ago, I would have been appalled if, like, hey, you know, the coach of the year, just give him 2 more years, and he's going to fizzle out, and you're going to want him gone. I would have never believed my future self in that regard, but, you know, things happen, and here we are. And we talked about it earlier in the show, Mason, that there's just so many things, whether it's the ineptitude on fourth down, the offense just stalling each and every time they reach, you know, the 30 of their opponent. There's just so many microcosms of what the Matt Nagy era was all about, and the big plays led up by the defense when it matters down the stretch, not being able to play any sort of complementary of football. You know, the list kind of goes on and on. But the positive is we can look forward. We can look at what's to come. And there's so many unknowns right now. We don't know who's going to be GM. We don't know who's going to be the head coach. We don't know who's going to be, honestly, any positional coach or the coordinator on each side of the ball as well. There's more than a handful of players on both sides that, again, are they back? Are they not? We'll find out. All these unknowns, though, at least at this stage for me, does create optimism just because, again, you can kind of retool, recalibrate, and maybe, you know, you're not looking at a Super Bowl here in the 2022 Bears regime, but maybe you're looking for steps forward. And that progress is something we haven't seen since 2018. We've seen a slow and steady death, and I'm excited to kind of, you know, rise like a phoenix yet again. With Justin Fields at the helm, with a new head coach, and a lot of good optimism behind it. So that's where I'm going to kind of end my two-minute warning. I didn't get any good tidbits here on Twitter about anything Nagy said post-game, which is another microcosm yet again. Mason, anything you want to leave it on before I close shop?
No, the only thing I would say is I think that this next couple steps for the Bears might drag out a little longer than Bears fans want. It's not like all of a sudden, you know, Tuesday you're going to be hearing that this GM is this head coach, et cetera, et cetera. No, it's going to take a little bit of time, and you're going to have to be a little patient.
Just a little bit. And I thought it'd be nice today for Matt Nagy one final time on this podcast, Mason. And I don't think I've done it in years, and I had to dig really hard in my hard drive to find it. But why not? You didn't like that?
But I'm mad because what a different time. Like, I remember how excited I was with Club Dub and with hearing the booms and, like, having the alarm that would go off right at the beginning of the game, like when they brought that in for, like, the final game of the season, the Eagles game. I'm just mad because it was so fun. That 2018 season was so great, and then it was just downhill and sad.
See, remember on Thursday when you guys kept stabbing me in the heart? I had to do
this. You returned the favor, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I knew I can get under your skin a bit, and that makes me a little excited. Even Shadow says, the boom pisses me off now. I know, I feel you. Same. But it's good news. You never have to hear it again, at least on this show. I've never hit that button. So help me God. But that's going to do it for this episode. I just want to thank all the Bears fans again. 6-11 year. You just watch your team or listen to your team give up a lead, giving up 28 points in the second half in a game that didn't matter. And you're still here listening to us talk about Chicago Bears football. And I think that's pretty damn awesome. And I just want to thank you for your continued support of our show. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We'll be doing off-season shows, you know, starting tomorrow on Black Monday. I don't know if Mason and I will be able to make that show. Just due to work schedules, and if news breaks about Matt Nagy earlier in the day, Nicholas Moriano, who was in Minnesota today to cover the game, will definitely be here to kind of share some of his thoughts reacting to the news that we know is coming our way. That will be what's up next. The Bears season does officially come to a close, and for the final time this year, Bear Down, Chicago.
Let it go.